And it's time now for Talk of the Town, a program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number, 395-1450. Our guest this morning is Judge Brad Knoll. Good morning, Judge.
Good morning.
And the judge is here to tell us about things that are going on in the court. And if you have a question, you may call us, 395-1450. All right, Judge, let's talk about the people that represent themselves in court. I heard somebody say that if you represent yourself in court, you have a fool for a client.
That's an old saying that has many true aspects to it. Those some people who are frequently in court, rental property owners and that sort of thing, do a good job. Sometimes they know the law better than the attorneys who don't practice in that area. A person who's charged with a criminal offense has an absolute right to represent themselves, but that I would urge people whenever they are indicating that they wish to represent themselves, that the criminal law is a complicated process and they really should have an attorney. If there's a possibility that I will send someone to jail if they are convicted for that criminal offense, I have an obligation to offer them a court-appointed attorney if they're unable to afford one. And I will usually urge an attorney upon someone like that. And I'm pretty lenient in terms of ability to afford an attorney. Most people with a job wouldn't be considered indigent, but still, given the cost of attorneys, I would appoint an attorney to represent them under those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think I saw the story on television where a man is representing himself when he's charged with murder.
They may do that. Frequently, a judge will have an attorney appointed to assist them, even if they're indicating the right to represent themselves. We sort of put an attorney in the co-pilot seat so they at least have someone they can consult with. But they have the right to examine witnesses or cross-examine witnesses.
Mm-hmm. We've got a call on the line here. Good morning. You're online with the judge. Hello. You're online with the judge. Let's try again. Good morning. You're online with the judge. We're not getting it through. Here we are. Good morning. You're online with the judge.
Wrong line. Don't have anybody right now.
Nobody on. Okay. All right. Now, if I wanted to represent myself in court, should I tell the court in advance that I wanted to do that?
Normally, in a criminal case, I'll ask a person how they're going to be proceeding at the initial court appearance called the arraignment.
Okay.
And people are free to change their minds. Frequently they say, well, I'm going to hire an attorney, and they talk to an attorney, and it's just cost prohibitive for them, so they can request a court-appointed attorney at any time of the court proceeding.
Yeah. Okay, now let's see if we can. Good morning. You're online with the judge.
Good morning. I was on before, but I couldn't make the connection.
Right. Well, we did, so here we are.
Yeah. When there's a court-appointed attorney, who pays for that?
The county, as part of its budget, provides for court-appointed attorneys for indigent people. One of the things the judge will have to do is make a determination whether the person might be able to partially afford the services of attorneys. So frequently, if a person is convicted, in addition to the regular fines and costs that the court imposes, they also require that the person reimburse for the court-appointed attorney fees during the course of their probation.
Is there a set amount?
The fees that the court-appointed attorneys may charge are set by the judges. We meet annually to review the performances of the court-appointed attorneys, and we also set the hourly rate that those attorneys may charge during the course of time. Ottawa County has always taken the approach that we want to have the best attorneys available to represent people who can't afford an attorney, and it's actually cost-effective, because if you have a good attorney representing a defendant, the cost to appeal a case where an attorney might have made errors or something like that is usually greater than the cost of the attorney originally. So we actually save money by paying more money to top-notch attorneys.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Now, you choose an attorney for somebody and they don't like the attorney. Can they say, I don't like him, get me another attorney?
if at some point the attorney relationship, the attorney-client relationship breaks down to the point that they just can't work together, then the court will look at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I served as a court-appointed attorney for many years before I was elected judge, and you know, attorney and a client don't necessarily have to like each other.
Yeah.
But the attorney has to do everything within his power to represent and defend that person. And even if the client may be a little skeptical about what the attorney is doing, the courts are reluctant to just have someone choose from a menu which attorney they want to have represent them. Certainly if an attorney has represented someone in the past, I'll know that when I rein them, and I'll say, for example, Attorney Piper has represented you in the past. I would propose to appoint him to represent you now. Do you have any problems with that?
So mm-hmm.
If there's going to be problems at the get-go, then we'll look at someone else. Now, there's one situation where attorneys have to be involved, and I'll talk about that after.
Okay, let's take this call. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yeah, I'm wondering, if there are court costs involved, how do those get paid? I mean, do they have to be brought in? Can it be something that's sent through the mail by money order? How is that taken care of?
Well, we try to make it as easy as possible for people to pay their fines and costs, and it need not be paid in person. We certainly accept payments made by mail. We also accept credit card payments. If you go to the court's website, on the county website, there's information as to how you can take care of those things. But we try to make it easy because it's part of our responsibilities as a court to be as self-sustaining as possible and collect those necessary funds.
Would that apply to Elgin County Court also?
I don't know exactly what their collection mechanism is in Elgin County. I don't know whether they accept online payments or not.
Okay.
I think most counties are moving toward that.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think we might have another call coming in. Let's check. Yes. Good morning. You're online with the judge.
Hi. I had a question about claims of ineffective counsel in Elgin County. I have to defend myself. I have to write my own motion to set aside the order in Elgin County for I voluntarily gave away parental rights in 2011, December 5th. And now I'm finding the children lived with me for 2 years, and I called on their father to complain about him abandoning them, and I was told, you have no parental rights, hon. You gave them away, and you can never get them back. And I did so under the advice of my counsel in Elgin County. And now it's 2 years later. The children were removed in September, and I have no parental rights. I'm trying to figure out what it is I have to do. I went to serve a motion to set aside the order in Elgin County based on the criminal scale form and was told, you can't do that. So now I'm finding I have to write this motion myself, and I don't have the money. I'm disabled. I have a permanent terminal illness where I'm sick and I'm in the hospital all the time. And at this point, a murderer has a chance of freedom, of reconciling with his freedom than I do with my children. With no money, what can I do aside from just bringing in a hand or typed written motion into Elgin? What can I do?
My suggestion would be that you contact the legal aid office.
I did so. They said that they could not help me because it was overextended the time and resources that they had available to me.
Mm, well, that's unfortunate. And some attorneys, even if they're not with legal aid and have a fact situation that they are sympathetic toward, will do what's called pro bono work, meaning that they won't charge their normal fees or maybe even charge any fees if they think an injustice has been done. Obviously, the law and the court rules need to be followed. Libraries have information regarding the law and the court rules. Also, there are online sites provided by the state of Michigan, the State Court Administrator's Office, that refer to the particular laws and court rules. Your situation is a very complicated situation. I would not think that a person who isn't well-versed in that area of the law would be able to proceed, But in terms of what particular forms motions have to take, it doesn't have to be typewritten with a certain font or double-spaced or anything like that, but it has to follow the law. It can be handwritten, but it needs to make reference to specific court rules or specific laws that would give you the right after all this time to challenge those prior court proceedings. But the file remains open in that sort of thing, or subject to being reopened. There are court rules that even after a long period of time, you can ask the court to look at something because an injustice has been done. But you might want to either check the laws online or at the library, or see if there's an attorney who, for a small conference fee, could point you in that direction, who maybe would sympathize with your situation and agree to take on the case, even though you couldn't pay their normal retainer.
Well, and I did call the state court administrative office and talk to a Colin and advised him that there are no forms under the Division for Family Court under 2.612F, any other reasons to file this motion to set aside the order. Mm-hmm. I've called around asking several attorneys across the nation and the state, really, in Detroit and Lansing, and saying, can you please help me? A public defender got me into this situation, and I need money to get out of the situation she got me in, and so I'm stuck in a catch-22, and I don't have much time, and my children, meanwhile, they're not in the system. They were placed with their natural father, who is neglectful and abusive, and they're advocating they want to come home, and yet I don't have a voice, and I'm trying to find out what to do. I understand your ideas of calling the state court administrative office, and that you said that it is a complicated ordeal. And so I just wanted to speak out that sometimes the public defender doesn't defend, and there's a high in disincentive to speak up and to protect parent rights, especially for the public defender. And there's a huge incentive to prompt the investigation to drag us into court. And so I will still continue to advocate for myself and educate myself on what steps need to be taken. I've tried to contact the Senator Arlen Meekhoff to speak to him to sponsor a bill for parental rights. But I would just like to speak up on behalf of other parents who are going through DHS and the system and through the state that we have a wonderful nation and we have a wonderful state. I love Michigan very much, but I think that this is something that the judges need to address. The children came home with me that night, and so sometimes the public defender doesn't work, and we have to do that on our own. But I wish there were more self-help and available steps to take that are clearly written out for a parent or for anyone who is going through the legal system.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're on the right track in terms of the court rule that you referred to, and motions can be filed, and the judge can hear you, but the judge can't be your lawyer, and if you're missing something, hopefully he can point that out. The problem you have at this point is the lapse of time that's taken place, and I think with respect to parental rights, it's not a matter of lack of laws. It's that the law, there are a lot of laws, but they are complicated, and the court needs to follow those closely. But okay. I appreciate your call, and if I can think of anything else, I would try to make that information available.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, bye.
That is a complicated matter.
Yeah, it's not a matter that I practiced a lot of before I became a judge, and it's not something that our district court has jurisdiction of. But certainly parental rights are one of the things, probably the most important aspect of the family court, and they look very closely at any situation before the court would involuntarily terminate parental rights. Mm-hmm. A person can voluntarily terminate parental rights, but normally that procedure involves very careful questioning of a person seeking to do that, making sure they fully understand the consequences of what they're doing.
I guess another problem we have is that legal aid is not available to this person.
And that's a decision that they have to make based on their budget, based on what they perceive as the situation or the problem. Normally they will at least speak to a person about it, but sometimes they're just not in a position to take on their case.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yes. Hey, Juke. Good morning. Say, I was listening to that woman that was just speaking there.
Yes.
I myself pretty much went through the same kind of situation that she did. And the when he said that the court looks into the situation before there is something that is decided on regards to if the parent is like ordered to either sign their parental rights off or kind of not. I find myself in that I was in the same situation, and I was married to my ex-wife. I went to jail for back child support. I was laid off from a job. And during the time that I was incarcerated, there was allegations that were put against me. And when I was released from jail and was thinking that my wife was, at the time was going to have my child was removed from me and placed with DHS. Now, when the court was looking at the allegations that were being held against me at the time, of course, I had to hire an attorney and go throughout the system from step to step to step, and it come out to be that the prosecutors dismissed the charges against me. Well, that still didn't do anything right with me because they put me kind of in the catch-22, like she was saying. They gave me almost the deal where I either make this choice or decision or they would do this and drag the situation out on me more longer and more money. And I was financially at that point in time completely dry. It cost over $20,000 to prove my innocence, but still I remained to lose my daughter. And the court system had no jurisdictions or anything. They brought people into court to testify. My lawyer cross-examined them. They both lied on the stand. And still to this day, I'm a good father. I work. I support my other minor children. I'm remarried. And my daughter is placed, I don't even have no idea where she's at. I have no rights to her because it was basically put into the situation that at the time, do I want to deal with having her come back and be placed with me and then later on down the road something come out of her mouth or whatever and then they would come after me and again. I myself know that this, you know, this the court system that we live in, or the court system has to do their job, and I correctly understand that. But I believe that what's taking place is without DHS being involved where they need to be involved and where they shouldn't be involved, they shouldn't be involved. You call and complain about a person neglecting a child, they say they look in.
I'm sorry, we were cut off there.
Yeah. When they say that they're going to get involved and look into something, they don't. And mm-hmm. when they shouldn't be getting involved, they do. And I know that two wrongs don't make a right or anything, but without having something to go on, DHS wouldn't have a job. And it's wrong. And now in my situation, my innocence was proven, but it still doesn't bring my daughter back to me. And you know, I mean, how can you just have someone judged upon allegations without proving otherwise?
Okay, let me let the judge respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a response.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to find the question that was there, but I would at least comment it, and I was trying to infer from what the caller was saying in terms of the procedure. It sounds like it may have involved both child protective proceedings and a criminal case. But what the caller said is there were court proceedings, there was an attorney, there was cross-examination process. We might not always agree with the results of the process, but it sounds like the process was used and in place. So I think that's when DHS is taking action with respect to allegations about a child's welfare being harmed, I think they're probably going to err on the side of safety for the child at least at the outset, they have powers to place a child temporarily, but the court oversees that entire process. Mm-hmm. The goal of the court is to reunite the biological parent with the child, and only if it appears that that's just not going to happen for whatever reason will the parental rights be terminated. But that's certainly not the goal of the court process. The goal of the court process is just the opposite.
Okay, got another call here. Yes, you're online with the judge.
Good morning, Duke. Good morning, Judge.
Good morning.
I'm calling in reference to a case that happened within, I would have to say, the last 6-7 months or so. Judge, you may be familiar with the case. You may even actually know the person involved. But what happened was he apparently got caught for another drunk driving, and he was up in the jail. Unfortunately, they put him on work release. But then, unfortunately, he walked away from work release. So they charged him with escape, and now he's been sentenced, and he's already in the system, in the state prison system. And if I recall correctly, there was some question as to whether he needed some meds, maybe for psychological purposes or whatever, and apparently, from what I understand, he was not receiving those medications, which may have had some bearing on him walking away. He was fortunate with the work release because I think he could get out 6 days a week to go to work. So, you know, that was part of it. But I'm just wondering what kind of efforts are being made out there to get people who have alcohol, just basically alcohol problems, psychological problems, getting them into a different system than simply being put in the prison system.
All right. Let me respond.
Well, thank you very much.
That's an excellent question. It's one I've been pondering and involved in because you frequently have people with mental health disorders who get involved in the criminal justice system, and I'm not sure how adequate we are in dealing with that. We place people on probation. We try to get them set up through community mental health with the proper therapy that they need so that they're not going to be violating the criminal laws. And frequently you have what are called co-occurring disorders where a person has both a drug or alcohol problem and a mental health issue, and they sort of work against each other, making either one difficult to solve. But several courts have employed the idea of a mental health court, similar to the sobriety court that we use, and that's something that I'm taking a closer look at this year because we have people getting involved in the criminal justice system whose primary problem seems to be a mental health disorder. They don't quite qualify for involuntary placement under the state's mental health code. They're not technically incompetent or insane, as those legal terms are involved. So we're dealing with these people, and we could do a better job of that. So I appreciate the caller's comments. The idea of work release, the courts will sometimes authorize work release for a person they've placed in jail. We leave that up to the sheriff's department. They have guidelines in terms of what persons qualify for work release, and we leave that up to them, but you are still considered to be in jail, so if you walk away from it, you've escaped from jail.
Right. Okay. And a quick look at the weather here, and the weather is brought to you by our friends at the Wooden Shoe Restaurant, where they are featuring the eggs Oscar Benedict. And the weather, increasing cloudiness with a high expected to be 29 degrees. And for tonight, overnight showers with the snow showers, that is, with a low of 17. And tomorrow, morning snow showers with a high of 21. And right now at 13 degrees. Good morning. You're online with the judge.
Morning, Joe. Judge, I have a question here, too. I am the person that filed a complaint. I had someone steal my truck. And they were having a mental problem at the time. So I got the truck back the same day. They picked this person up. They took him to jail. And having a mental issue, we tried to get him help. And they said they were doing an evaluation at the jail out of a county. Mm-hmm. And he was in jail there because I told the prosecutor, I said, I'm dropping the charges because I got my truck back. And I know he has a mental problem. So they held him in jail, and he was in there probably 90 days at least. And he couldn't get out. And they said that he had two felonies.
And what it was a verbal abuse to an officer. Well, there was no contact with an officer. It was just verbal. So that they said that those are felonies. Is that true?
Well, there's several issues that you brought up there. Number one, if a citizen is a victim of a crime and makes a complaint about that, they have several rights under the Victims' Rights Act. One of the rights that they don't have is to terminate the prosecution because the community itself has an interest in prosecuting criminal cases. So even if you're the victim of the crime and call a prosecutor and say, I'm dropping these charges, that's not your call. It's the prosecutor's call.
Uh-huh.
Resisting and obstructing a police officer is an offense that can involve physically resisting or obstructing a police officer, or it can involve failing to observe an officer's lawful commands. Typical situation where
That's
an officer has a right to investigate a situation and a person is there and the officer says, wait here, or stay there, or don't run away.
Uh-huh.
There's no physical contact between them, but the officer is doing his job. That person has disobeyed the officer's lawful commands, and they fall within that statute that makes that unlawful behavior, and it's a charge that can carry up to 2 years in prison.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That is called a felony?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's called a high court misdemeanor, which is essentially the same thing.
Okay. And now they held him in jail that long, and they're still doing a psych evaluation, and they have no response from that yet.
That's part of the problem, is that people will be incarcerated. Their attorney may be claiming that they're incompetent to stand trial or that they were legally insane at the time they committed the offense. In those situations, the matter is referred to the state forensic center, where psychiatrists perform examinations. But as you can imagine, there's a time lapse involved in that can run to a couple, 3 months, and the judge is in the situation where he doesn't want to see the person locked up, but there's community safety concerns if the person is let go, and it's that gray area where there's not a serious enough mental health issue that the person is going to be committed under the mental health
code.
And
we're out of time for today.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
You bet. Thanks, Judge.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge, for being here this morning. I appreciate your visit again, and we'll have to do this again.
Oh, yeah. I always learn something when I come here.
All right.
Thank you.